Good morning, I'm Marilyn Smith, WOSU News. This is Open Line Weekend. We're talking about the arts in Columbus today with WOSU's senior television producer and the producer of WOSU's art scene, Cindy Gaylord, and with Joy Riley, who is a professor of theater at Ohio State and a theater critic for WOSU Radio. Good morning to you both, and thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We coincidentally heard both of you on Morning Edition this morning. Joy, we ran a review that you and your son Patrick did of A Chorus Line. Cindy, you did a profile of a longtime Columbus photographer, Kojo Kamau. Mm-hmm. And Joy, let's get to the review first. You and I had talked about A Chorus Line coming to Columbus because I think we had both seen it in Mershon 100 years ago when it first came to Columbus. And now it's at the Ohio Theater through the weekend. And both of us were looking forward with great, great anticipation to this play being revived. However, and that may be part of the equation, you found it somewhat disappointing.
Yes, I did. But maybe my expectations were too high because I have to admit that when I've seen it quite a few times, and the first time, I honestly thought it's one of my most favorite musicals mm-hmm. ever. And it still is. I remember in the mid 70s seeing it, and it was so different and so exciting, and people were revealing their inner thoughts, and they were artists. It was a story about young artists, dancers, trying to overcome all the obstacles to getting a job. So when I went, the expectation as the economy went down, my expectations for this show kept going up. When I actually walked in the door for the interview, it was interesting. I bumped into Michael Grossberg of the Dispatch, and we were talking about how interested we were to see it again, and how it had the same impact on us back then that Spring Awakening has now. Mm. It was sort of absolutely stunning, innovative, different. I was very excited by the opening. I loved the dancing, but it started to become very predictable and rather boring and rather long, and I was very sad about that. So maybe it'll just tighten. It just seemed slow, and I think it's because we've been seeing things like Spring Awakening or God, The Color Purple, where the sort of choreography is sort of exciting and slightly startling in places, and I was enjoying it. I can't say I wasn't enjoying it, but it was just, by the end.
Well, of course, this play is 30 years old. It opened in 1976. It won a Pulitzer that year. It also took 8 Tonys, I believe. But the times are very different, and the way we view media is very different. The way media comes at us is very different. We're used to things coming from all directions very quickly. And this has a different pace.
It has a different pace. I wanted more dance, as a matter of fact. I thought one of the things they would do would be to introduce even more dance mm-hmm. because there's a lot of dancing at the beginning and then there's numbers at the end. And in between, there's these long sort of soliloquies or this discussion between the person who's auditioning them, the director for a job, and each actor. He's trying to determine which 8 he wants to put in his final cast. And that just seemed to drag on and on, that portion of it. Whatever it was, it still did. But this is an out-of-town tryout still. I mean, they're still working on it. And maybe it'll tighten up and move faster. But it was not the totally exciting evening that I had predicted for myself.
And your son, mm-hmm. because he had pretty much the same expectation.
Well, this is the sort of interesting thing. The first time I asked my son to accompany me to the theater and give me his views officially was with Wicked. And I asked him to do that because he had read the novel and I had not, and I thought he would really inform our discussion, which he did. And then I discovered to my intense interest that he has a different point of view entirely than I do about what is boring and what is exciting. I am definitely a product of older times. Mm-hmm. And so I always found that interesting when I had the opportunity to ask him to go with me, because he reflects very much the young of today. For instance, I teach classes at OSU, and I had asked my students to go and see Godspell downtown. at the Southern Theater, which was brought in by Kappa and OSU together. And I loved it. Of course, I knew it very well. I'd seen it many, many times. I found that the students who were in musical theater or were in the show loved it. But surprisingly, my students who had never seen it before, they didn't get it. And they were not interested in it. They didn't get it. They were quite critical. But these are the sort of 18, 19, 20-year-olds of today. And so I think it's very important for us in theater to find out what it is that actually captures their attention. And it's things like Spring Awakening, obviously.
This is Open Line. I'm Marilyn Smith. We're talking with OSU theater professor Joy Riley and with WOSU producer Cindy Gaylord. And the number here is 292-8513. We're talking about the arts again. And what's coming up this summer? We're beginning with theater because we did have a review of A Chorus Line on the air this morning during Morning Edition. It can now be found on our website at WOSU.org. You mentioned Michael Grossberg, who wrote a review for The Dispatch, which was very different in some ways than yours. He said that A Chorus Line still packed a punch. During our interview, which resulted in a review, your conclusion along with Patrick was that it sort of lacked a punch.
Yes.
How do you go about forming a review of theater? And Cindy, please feel free to weigh in. And whether it's food, film, whatever, a piece of artwork, what are the variables that you consider when you're critiquing a work of art?
Well, it's a very interesting challenge because it is an art. I mean, in the final analysis, I have now decided I have to go with my intuition. I have to be true to what I think. Then I always have something to go back to. And sometimes I quite, you know, I don't think the same as other people. Mm-hmm. It depends. Well, first of all, if you need to be informed before you go in. You have to have information on the background of the piece. Is this a new piece? What are they trying to do? Or is this a revival of a much-loved musical, The Sound of Music, Oklahoma, South Pacific, all those? You have to know that. You have to have an idea of, you have to have some background information. We actually train young theater critics. That's one thing that we also do. And we ask, you know, they have to know something about the direction. What does the director do? What is the challenge for the actors, the director? And is it a Broadway production that has a commercial point of view, because it has to make money or it's going to die if it's coming on the touring on a tour around the country?
And do you hold it to a higher standard if it is a Broadway play?
It depends. What I hold to a high standard is professional theater. It makes absolutely no difference whether it's Broadway or, in fact, regional professional theater for the most part is better sometimes even than Broadway. So that's what I hold. But some of the Broadway revivals are not as good as the original Broadway productions. On the other hand, some of them are much, much better. So it's very exciting. I just think you have to be very informed about all the different sort of the history and the background of the art and the craft and what people are trying to do. And then you have to just sit back and feel the experience. Mm-hmm. And I always look also for the response from the audience, because I feel that the response from the audience tells me a lot. And sometimes I see really fabulous response and excitement from the audience, and it's not reflected in a review that I read later, and I cannot understand. And it may be that the particular theater critic who was writing that review was not present the night that audience mm-hmm. was there. So each night is slightly different in live theater. It's not the same as film.
Well, of course, though, you're right. If you see a real visceral reaction from the audience and the next day you read a review that's rates something as fairly mediocre, you think, well, that certainly wasn't the impression, you know, that I got or that the 500 people sitting around me got.
And also our tastes are all changing. I mean, talk about 30 years ago. 30 years ago, yes, I had different views than I do now, and I'll probably change entirely by next year. But I do think that we're very lucky to have the Broadway series coming in because it does offer up all of these sort of recent shows. And this 20th anniversary season from Broadway Across Columbus was just terrific. It brought in tremendous productions.
And there are still a couple more plays to be staged this summer.
Yeah. several more are coming through.
Dora the Explorer.
Yeah, and Mamma Mia the musical is coming again.
Which has been a huge phenomenon, whether the music, the musical, or the movie, it's kind of taken everybody by storm.
Well,
the
original musical I saw and I loved it. I loved the movie even more. And now I'm hoping that I'm going to really love the live experience. Having seen Meryl Streep do that role, but I fell in love with her doing it, so we'll see.
And Cindy, you do something of a critique before you go after a project for Art Scene, for example.
Well,
you have to weigh whether that particular artwork meets your standard.
Right, for it to actually be included in the show, sure. Before I forget, though, Mamma Mia is on my mind. I can't wait for it to come in because I first saw Mamma Mia here in Columbus, and it was the first run around the country, and it was fabulous. The second run around the country, I didn't like it as much. Mm. I mean, talk about different set of cast, and I put that to the vocal versatility of the cast. I really didn't think they had quite the punch. Talk about
sometimes
punch.
Sometimes it's the director also.
Yeah, sometimes
letting,
it's the director.
Letting the pace of the show flop.
Yes, but this one was really just vocal quality. I thought everybody hit their mark and were good actors, but the lead who played the Meryl Streep character really just wasn't up to snuff. So I'm hoping that it comes again. Regardless, I'm going to go see it. You know, so
so am I. You see, it draws us in if we loved it.
Right, absolutely. But what I do is a little bit different. I am not a critic like Joy would be. I'm not academically trained to do that. But I do know a good story when I am given one. So it's one of those things that I hit very viscerally. If it hits me and I get a little chill, then I think, hey, that's something that, you know, other people might really like.
And you use yourself as a yardstick.
Absolutely. Use myself as a yardstick. I purposely don't get when I go and I interview somebody, of course, I do my research and I talk to the director, I talk to the actors and things like that. But I use myself as a yardstick because my viewers are just like me. Mm. And if I find that I've a story that's intriguing, I think they'll find it intriguing as well. But in no way is it kind of a critique of that. It's more of a, hey, is this worth knowing?
Sure. 292-8513. We're talking about the arts today with Cindy Gaylord and Joy Riley. And we'd like to hear from you as well. Nancy's on the line. Go ahead, Nancy.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm in my 50s, my mid-50s, and I grew up with certain musicals that my parents seemed to like, of course, Lerner and Lowe. Has there ever been a revival of Gigi?
I don't know the answer to that one. I think there has. I'm sure there must have been.
Well, there was a television, or not a television, but a film, obviously,
yes,
that was made.
Yes, but I think Audrey Hepburn put her mark on it.
Leslie Caron.
Oh, Leslie Caron, yeah. Too, yeah.
And also, Lerner and Lowe, there was a little movie that came out in the mid-70s. One of my favorite Broadway actors was Richard Kiley, best known, I guess, for Man of La Mancha. But he did a little movie called The Little Prince, and Bob Fosse was in it. It was a Lerner and Lowe musical, and who else was in it? Gene Wilder. I wonder if anyone would ever consider doing that again or making it a stage production.
I think it depends who you ask. If you ask the Broadway group, the people in New York, if they think they can make it pay, I'm sure they would do it again. And because look at all these children's musicals that have been revived time and again and time and again. And we had Chitty Chitty Bang Bang going through just recently. I think they would, but they have to be convinced that they can get producers. They've got to be able to find somebody to underwrite the cost of the production, of putting the production together. And that's very expensive. But I think possibly locally, in places like Catco or maybe even in the community theaters used to always put on shows like that. So I think you might even talk to the children's theater here. The two children's theater here in Columbus, it's quite possible that they might be induced to put in a new version of that because it would play at the local level.
Of course, I think adults are the ones that love The Little Prince the most because it brings out the child in them. And also, the only time I've seen Broadway plays, I haven't been fortunate to go to New York too many times, I got to see the revival of Man of La Mancha, and it starred Raul Julia, which was all right, I guess, but Shayna Easton played, you know, Scottish rock star, played Dulcinea, which I thought was bizarre.
Well, that particular musical has been revived in summer theater for quite a few years, and it's very, very popular. I remember it being done at Weathervane Playhouse. And here, and also we had several touring productions go through here. So there are revivals of, there have been revivals of all these musicals. I just don't know about The Little Prince.
Joy, do you feel like that it's kind of like you have to have a name of the a play or a musical that is very well known that people will come again and again to see, that'll make it a good business model. But then the artists, on the other hand, say, well, you know, I've played this character, you know, 5 years now, and I would like to move on. So you have kind of a balance to strike of what's familiar but what is also maybe theatrically challenging.
Yes. A familiar name will bring in audiences.
Sure.
But something that's exciting and challenging will bring in the performers. Right. All the artists want to be involved in something new. They want to try and create their own stamp. They want to try and they want to be challenged and to be unpredictable.
And as our caller Nancy pointed out, it was Richard Kiley and Gene Wilder in maybe it was The Little Prince. But how important is casting? How important is that magnetism, say, in an ensemble cast or the way the actors bounce off each other and work off each other?
Well, once again, when you're touring when you're touring Broadway shows, you usually have a star in the lead, or you certainly have a name, just as in the movies, you have a name to get the rest of the money for the show. And so you have a star vehicle and a star in a show. But more and more now, it's sort of more of an ensemble piece. You have to have a cast. Everybody's got to be equally competent. They all have to be able to sing, act, and dance in musicals. And a star might bring in the audience, but it won't keep the audience coming in after people have seen it and the theater critics have responded to it.
And, of course, the Tonys were just on last week, I think, and Billy Elliot won 8 or 10
yes.
Tonys, and there are 3 kids playing
and
the lead.
And they're adorable, and they tied for the best actor. And I remember seeing the movie of that first, mm-hmm. before the musical.
So did I,
and
yeah.
I just loved it.
I fell in love with it.
Yes.
It was wonderful.
Well, because it's about an artist, you know, potential sure. artist dreaming about their art, and you know what challenges they have ahead of them, how difficult it would be for them to make it. I just fell in love with the movie, and I haven't seen the musical, but I'm going to see it hopefully this summer.
292-8513. It's Open Line. I'm Marilyn Smith. It's Open Line Weekend, and we're talking about the arts and culture in Columbus. And, of course, we're just at the beginning of a whole summer season of music and arts festivals. We're talking with Cindy Gaylord of our WOSU staff, a senior producer here at WOSU, and with OSU Theater Professor Joy Riley, who's frequently heard here on WOSU. As I mentioned, we are embarking on the summer theater season, and the Shakespeare Festival in Schiller Park is doing something a little different this year. They're starting out with The Three Musketeers.
And they're playing it right now.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I did actually talk to an actress from the show, Beth Josephson, and I did interview her, and that ran here on the radio last week. So, yes, Actors Theatre, Schiller Park, and apparently it's tremendous fun, and there's a lot of sword fighting in it, and the women are sword fighting their way as well. So,
are these women playing men, playing men, playing women?
Well, it's the classic story, Alexandre Dumas's tale, but it's adapted by Ken Ludwig, and I don't know Ken Ludwig's adaptation, but I do know that John Kuhn directed it, and Beth assured me that there was a lot of sword fighting, and the audience loves it.
Well,
so
kids will love it, too.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It's a really fun. And that goes through June 28th at 8 o'clock in Schiller Park. There is a website if you want more information, and there's a box office number there, too.
And we should mention that many of your interviews with local actors and writers and directors are on our website at WOSU.org. Just click on the Arts and Culture section and then go to theater. It's a little circuitous, but you can get there without too much pain.
Maybe we should also remind our listeners that this is free theater. I mean, in this climate, this is a wonderful bargain. I mean, you can go downtown and you can see this wonderful comedy, but you can also later on in the season see The Tempest and As You Like It by Shakespeare. It is free, although they do ask for donations because, of course, they have to cover their costs and they have to pay the actors. But it's a wonderful bargain, and it was all started by Joe Papp in New York in the mid-50s. And people should go down and take their picnic.
Well, my favorite thing to do is actually take a chair that's comfortable.
Yes.
Because it's wonderful. I know that's a simple thing, but, you know, theater chairs can be comfortable after about an hour. But it's a wonderful thing to sit there and relax and recline and have a great time with a bunch of people. I love doing that every summer.
And it's a great venue for young people who want to get their feet wet, whether it's backstage work or in front of the lights. And every year, kids volunteer, young people flock down there to be part of this festival.
And it's Thursday through Sunday. This particular production of The Three Musketeers is Thursday through Sunday in June. And then, of course, it's followed by the other two.
And if John Kuhn directed it, every single person has a sword. I know he does.
292-8513. Michael's on the line. Go ahead, Michael.
Hello.
Yeah.
Thanks for taking my call. I just had two quick questions. One, do you have any information as to why it's taking Les Mis so long to come to film? And secondly, do you have any reaction to the strange situation of movies becoming musicals? For example, Young Frankenstein. It used to be somebody just wrote the book and the lyrics, and there was your musical. And I'll take my answer offline. Thank you.
Well, I think that's a very interesting question.
Well, the Producers was also a movie before.
Yes, right. And you have musicals becoming movies, and you have movies becoming musicals. And so that's how The Lion King also got started. You know, it was a movie that was popular with kids. And then it became this incredibly artistic and extraordinary musical. I don't know what to say in terms of why we have that, but we certainly do have it. And it's because of the media. We all have access. A lot of people go to see movies. A lot of people go to see musicals. But, of course, movies, the more people going to see movies. And they want to see that in another form.
And, of course, the other part of Michael's question was why it's taking so long to make Les Mis into a movie.
I don't know the answer to that. It certainly, I mean, three times it played here with sold-out audiences. I don't know why it's taking so long to become a movie. But as far as Young Frankenstein is concerned, that is going to be a musical, and that is going to be coming through in the fall.
292-8513. And if you'd like to call in about some of the summer events that are going on here in Columbus, feel free to do that. Blackbird is currently being staged at Cat Cojoy, and you talked with John Putnam recently, who is the local star of that.
Talk about star quality. Whenever John is in a play, I always make sure I see it because he can give you so many different faces. I made sure I saw him in Pillow Man because he was actually the sinister cop. And I never saw him play sinister before. So I think this is going to be a great play for him.
Well, this is, yes, we have a little clip on our website here because I asked him and Anna Panaccia to do a little sort of example for us of the script because he told me that for him, when he read that script originally, he was excited about it because it was one of the most interesting scripts he had ever read. And so I was amazed because he reads all the new scripts that are submitted down to CADCO. And it's the play. I haven't seen the play yet. I am going to see it. It's playing right now. And so it continues through the end of the month here. I'm looking for a date.
And if you like The Pillow Man, if you like kind of
June the 21st.
The type of how do I say off-kilter type of play?
Dark.
Thank you. That's a good place. Then this is the type of play for you. And I commend CATCO for making a commitment that at least one of their plays will be something that challenges and is provocative.
And this is very provocative. It's not for young kids. It's for parents need to be advised that this is – I was a bit startled when he told me what it's a relationship between a 12-year-old girl that happened before the play starts and an older man, and they meet. She comes and seeks him out later on, and they meet. And he called it a love story. But I don't know what to think, so I've got to go and see it. But it's a dark and unexpected play.
292-8513. Mark, I know you're on the line, and if you'll hold there for just a couple of minutes, we're going to take a break here on Open Line Weekend. I'm Marilyn Smith. We're talking with Cindy Gaylord of our staff here at WOSU and Ohio State Theater Department Professor Joy Riley. We'll be back after a couple of messages.
On the next Fresh Air, Artie Lang of The Howard Stern Show, a self-described miserable person who doesn't enjoy his own company. Lang's memoir, Too Fat to Fish, is now out in paperback. His messed up personal life and his food and drug problems become the basis for his funniest stories. So does that make his fans enablers? Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Fresh Air comes your way starting at 12 noon right here on WOSU.
Support for the Statehouse News Bureau stories heard today on WOSU comes from the law offices of Porter Wright Morrison Arthur LLP, helping businesses and individuals solve complex legal problems throughout Ohio, across the country, and around the world. On the web at porterwright.com.
In the weather forecast for today, cloudy and a high of about 75, low tonight 58. Tomorrow, some sunshine on Saturday with a high of 78 degrees. And then on Sunday, some sunshine and a high of 78 degrees. Right now we have 68 degrees.
WOSU News reports on the stories you need to hear and the stories you want to hear.
When Indianola Junior High School opened its doors in September of 1909, it had 12 teachers and over 300 students.
At that time, junior high schools were created to bridge the gap between high school and elementary school.
Get more from your news with the award-winning WOSU News team on WOSU 89.7 FM, NPR News, and classical music.
I'm Marilyn Smith, WOSU News. It's Open Line Weekend, and we're talking with Cindy Gaylord of the WOSU television staff and OSU theater professor Joy Riley. We're talking about the arts and culture here in Columbus. And Mark, as promised, you're on the air.
Hi. My name is Mark Philip Schwamberger, and I'm the executive director of Evolution Theater Company. And actually, I just have a comment, and the discussion is very interesting, especially about how theater companies, the risk and the that you take when you try to do something that's new and sort of out of the box. I mean, all the stuff we do, we always try to do a blend of getting critical acclaim as well as monetary gain. And it's very difficult when you don't do something that's known to
that's
the general
safe.
Public.
Yeah, because you actually need both, don't you? You can't have one without the other.
Right. And I also thought that Ms. Riley's comment was very interesting about getting the young people into the theater and the different take that they have on various productions that are being seen, that it really is trying to bridge the generation gap is also quite a daunting feat when you're mounting something that isn't known to the general public.
Yeah, Mark, I absolutely agree with you agreeing with me here. I think it's critical for us to find out what it is that's going to turn them onto live theater. We have to do that. So.
Well, of course, you're in a unique position teaching young people at Ohio State that other people in theater might not be in. You know, they don't have the proximity to as many students.
I'm glad that Mark actually called in because I wanted to mention that you guys have you have a new theater company, Evolution Theater Company.
Right.
Do you want to tell us about your new world premiere that you're going to be opening on June the 17th?
Sure. We're doing a new work by Edwin Sanchez, and it's the world premiere. We were lucky enough, I guess you could say, that he allowed us to premiere his work in Columbus, Ohio, rather than in one of the more notable theatrical cities of the country. And it's very different from, if you know Edwin Sanchez's work, it's very different from most of his other work in the sense that it is a very light, romantic comedy. And it's basically sort of like the gay romantic comedy of Gentlemen Prefer Blondes. And it's very different from his work. It's great fun to do. Paul Lockwood and myself are co-directing the production that opens. We open preview next week on Wednesday, and opening night is next Thursday evening, with the playwright is going to be there both evenings. So we're very excited about it. It's a very new thing for both of us to do, both Mr. Sanchez's work and for us to be producing it. So we're very excited about it.
Thank you very much for your call this morning. Joy, in addition to Evolution Theater, you interviewed somebody from Carrick
yes.
Macross Productions
yes.
recently, which
yes.
is another fairly new theatrical company.
Yes, it is. And they did a show last year. And it's Kevin McClatchy is the artistic director of that. And they're going to be opening tonight, The Blowing of Ballygall, and by Ronan Noon, an Irish playwright who now lives in Boston. It's directed by Maureen Ryan, and it is an Irish play. I have not seen it. It is first for this area. So that's tonight at Mad Lab Theatre. You can go online at www.madlab.net to find out more information, and I assume it's probably at 8 o'clock.
And there's also your interview on our website,
yes.
WOSU.org. Let's shift gears here a little bit. We just had the 2009 Columbus Arts Festival in the Discovery Zone last weekend. We had beautiful weather, a little bit cooler, probably 15 to 20 degrees cooler than it was last year.
Thank God.
Yes, it was kind of like being in a kiln or something
last year
trying to get down there. I found that I had a little bit of trouble finding my way around. And I think part mm-hmm. of that was visual, because when it was downtown, you could actually see the tents set up across the bridge and on the west side of the river. Whereas in the Discovery Zone, because of the buildings that are intersecting the layout of the Arts Festival, you can't necessarily tell where it goes or
where
it ends.
There's a lot more trees, too. A lot more trees, a lot more mm-hmm. Kind of fingers off if you go into the Columbus Museum of Arts parking area. That was where the kids were, and they could do hands-on stuff. And then almost opposite is where all of the live performances were. Mm-hmm. And then you have big buildings in between there. So you can't see one thing and then say, hey, I want to go over there.
Right.
You know, so I think that's the hard part of that location. But the vendors love that location, and the ones that I talked to said it's much easier to get in and out of there. And that's really important for these people,
you know,
to get their inventory in. But, you know, I think it's just the second year, and I think your issue is not a new one. People I've talked to said there's two – they were north-south kind of avenues in between there that weren't as visited as the ones on the outside. Everybody thought it was a square. Right. But it was more like kind of a strange domino square. You know, you had these two in there. But I think people will become more familiar with it as it goes on there. Yeah.
Now, there were some 265 artists from across the country. And of course, there are many artists who are on the summer art circuit, and they go from festival to festival, and that they make the bulk of their living this way. This is a juried show, right?
It is.
What
is
that?
Absolutely jury.
What does that mean?
It is a blind jury where artists that have been there before and people in the community look at the portfolios and decide who can be in and who
okay.
can't.
Blind in the sense that they don't know who
they
the
don't
artist
know who,
is.
Yeah, who the artist is. So they had, I think, almost 1,000 applicants this year.
Wow.
And they had people from all over the United States and one from Tel Aviv that come in. So it is hard to get in. You talk to the vendors there and they say it's hard, but they love it here for two reasons. One, people come down here, and no matter what the weather, we may grumble about it, but they actually attend. And people in Columbus buy. So some years are a little bit better than others. Last year was a little bit of a down year. But this year we had somewhere over 400,000 people come in, and the vendors were thrilled.
How do you know whether somebody, you know, whether they've bought stuff? How do they keep track of that? I mean, the fact that it's worth these artists to come in here at their own expense to sell their products.
I ask them. So I go around and interview probably 5 to 10 every year that will talk to me. And there's a report that GCAC generates. And the fact that it's just so popular with vendors, it is really hard to get into this. You know, there has been an issue lately of, you know, why don't we see more Columbus and or Ohio? There's a lot of Ohio artists in there. But really, they just don't have as many applications. So if you want Ohio artists in there, encourage your Ohio artists to apply.
And when it started out years and years ago on the Statehouse lawn, I think we did see more local artists. But as it's grown in size and in scope, and more artists obviously have heard and are applying, do they try and mix it up so that some people do come back, so that if you have a favorite artist, you can go down there every year and buy a teapot or a tile or whatever you might
it
be
just
collecting?
Absolutely. And it just depends on if they apply or not, if they want to come back. A lot of them do. And I know that some of the award winners are automatically let in for the next year. So, yeah, they do. They also have price points, too. You know, they don't always – I know it sounds like there's a lot of high-end stuff there, and there is, but there are items there for $10 and $10,000. So they try to the smaller, you know, under 100, harder to find. That's admitted, but it is there.
Well, and of course, these are very special things that you're collecting, and so you do expect to pay a little bit more. But I would think that the show over time would have to reflect wholesale changes in art, that when glassmakers go from one kind of work to, you know, the other end of it, for example, or tile, not tile, but clay people, you know, that it all evolves.
And it all evolves. You look at photography, you had there were many people that had silver gelatin prints, which are actually pretty expensive to make. But then you had other people that were printing on canvas, which is much more of an industrial process, and it's a little easier to do that. So I think you're seeing an evolution there. Yeah, definitely. That the artists themselves, just to be have a good business model, they have to include.
292-8513. We're talking about the arts and culture here in Columbus with Cindy Gaylord, who is the producer of Art Scene here at WOSU-TV, and OSU Theater I call you WOSU Theater Professor. Joy Riley is professor
she
of theater everywhere. The world is her stage.
Yes.
ComFest is coming up at the end of the month. It's always the last weekend in June. And I remember when ComFest was in this little strip of land behind High Street across from Goodale Park. And now, of course, it's completely taken over the park for that weekend. And I always marvel at these stories that people come back here, people who have lived in Columbus and then moved away as far away as Portland, Oregon. They'll plan their vacation to come back here during ComFest.
Sure.
And it's just the funniest thing to me, because there's nothing – it's so quirky, but yet there's nothing really outstanding that you can point to and say, oh, it's this or it's that.
Well, I think that – I'll argue with that.
Okay.
I think that there is – it's all about community. It's all about getting together and relaxing. It's like being in a friend's backyard with 10,000 of your closest friends.
It is very laid back.
It's very laid back. And I don't think there's any festival around the country that's like it, where you can sit and listen to – and the big thing are the bands.
Sure.
You know, and all the variety of bands, but the quality of bands. So I think it's one of those things that it's not necessarily one big thing, although we could talk about the beer trucks that are all around.
Or the costumes.
Or perhaps the costumes.
Or the lack of costumes.
Or the lack of costumes. You know, I think all of that just generally lends itself to this wonderful air of relaxation, you know, that you can't really get anywhere else.
What if somebody hasn't been to the ComFest? Do you have advice for them on the best way to participate in this?
Come with an open mind. But I would say come later in the afternoon. You know, it's not a festival that you want to go at noon, like the arts festival, and have lunch. And, you know, although there are food vendors, don't get me wrong. But
and there are artistic vendors as well. There
absolutely.
Are arts people that go down there, sell their wares as well.
And that's another thing. You know, you have the arts festival, which is kind of this high-end stuff. And then you have ComFest, which is, I wouldn't say low-end, but it's different.
A little funkier, maybe.
It's funky. Yeah. That's a good way of putting it.
292-8513. And you can call and tell us why you look forward to ComFest, why you go to ComFest. And, of course, There's always the fear that it will become co-opted. A lot of businesses and companies and radio stations, such as this one, have tents at ComFest now. Mm-hmm. And it does take away from the kind of outsider renegade feel that it may have had in the past.
Well, I also think that the people that are involved, or the people that go there, tend to ignore all of
so
that.
It's all for naught.
I just don't think that they take that kind of thing seriously.
So what would you say is among the most popular attractions? Or is there no such thing?
I don't know that there is any such thing. I think it's the music, the live music, the live dancing with or without clothing. I think it really is, and it's an evening thing. I think it's something that you would want to go, 3 o'clock in the afternoon and hang out for a long time.
Well, of course, you see families down there more during the day. And I know when my kids were little, we'd go over to ComFest and look around and sure. see what was to be seen. And it has evolved a great deal. And now, of course, they're old enough to go on their own and do God knows what. But it certainly is a very popular draw in Victorian Village and in the Short North. The Gay Pride Weekend, which has always been held on the same weekend as ComFest, has been separated this year.
Right. Well, but that's due to construction because they always ended up at Bicentennial Park. And now they are going to start downtown and end up at Goodale. So they can't have both at the same time, the ComFest and the Gay Pride, end of the Gay Pride Parade. So it's just a logistical kind of thing.
Well, given that, though, do you think that activities around Gay Pride Weekend will, in fact, expand because there's room now for them to expand?
They've always actually taken over the brewery district, so I don't know that there's any place to expand. They may expand at the park just a little bit, but they pretty much filled up Bicentennial Parks. I think they'll just take what they have and bring it over. We're a party town this end, at the end of June. I don't think they'll have any problem filling up every square inch of.
Well, the end of June and, of course, the beginning of July when we'll have Red, White, and Boom.
Absolutely.
And the Doodah Parade, which also fill up the Short North and Victorian Village with all sorts of suburbanites practicing their parallel parking maneuvers.
I remember when the Doodah Parade started, but this is a long time ago.
It's been about 25 years ago.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Because I remember going to that very early one.
And how outrageous it was.
It was outrageous. It was absolutely wonderful.
I don't think it's changed that much.
Well, there are years where it seems better, sharper, a little more satirical, and years where it seems a little flatter. And, of course, it does reflect items in the news. It reflects current events. And depending on how ridiculous or sublime those are, the parade is pretty much the same. And, of course, there are always the marching Fidels who show up each and every year because – face it, Castro doesn't go away either.
Yeah, exactly. And as soon as he, leaves the planet, I'm sure we will have it for the next 20 years. It doesn't matter. One thing I do want to mention is Drive-In at the Wex. There are movies that are at the Wexner Center that are projected outside where you can go in, bring your lawn chair, very much like you can do Shakespeare in the Park, and sit. The first one is The Wolfman. Come on. That is just too much fun. It's Thursday, June 18th at 6:30, and they're going to have two more throughout the summer. I think one of those is Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? So it's a lot of fun. You bring family down there, bring a picnic lunch. They'll have popcorn and ice cream for free. So I think it's going to be
fun.
You can
go just for that.
You can just go for that. I'll just eat ice cream for dinner. So
292-8513. Again, we're asking you why you go to ComFest, for example, or perhaps what your favorite arts festival of the summer might happen to be. There have been some calamities due to the economy. The Rose Festival, the Park of Roses, has been canceled for this year, and that has been a real stable festival here for probably the last 20, 22 years. Music in the Air, I think, is going away.
A Heritage Jazz Concert Series over at the King Arts Complex is also in jeopardy. I think they're still going to start early July, but it's in jeopardy and they need funds over there. People have to realize that these things are – the free concerts are free for a reason, that you have a sponsor that takes up all of the financial responsibility of taking care of that concert. And if you love it, make some noise.
Absolutely, because it's not going to come back and it's not going to be saved unless people, rise up and save it.
And the Heritage Concert Series is a wonderful – I mean, there are thousands of people at King Arts Complex, and we need to make sure that that's saved. All of them are saved.
Well, and in doing a little bit of research for today's show, there is a jazz in the park at Goodale, I think, mm-hmm. on Sunday afternoons. And there have been people in the Short North who have gone around and raised money and collected money specifically to save that because they love it and they go there every week. I think the Festival Latino, mm-hmm. The city slashed their budget really down to the bare bones, and they've managed to go out and get some sponsors, and that's going on. And the Jazz and Ribs Festival has suffered the same fate, but it will continue because of a private sponsorship. But on the other hand, these events are so important to the city of Columbus.
Absolutely.
Not only do they enrich the tapestry of the community in which we live, but they also bring in a huge amount of money, $7.23 billion, and create a great deal, a great number of jobs. And I think I read 61,000 jobs. In restaurants and hotels and other venues where people go and spend their money.
Absolutely. And think about that. We are – I think I read somewhere that if you looked at the gross national product of other nations, we would rank – Columbus alone would rank somewhere on 16th because of the revenue that the arts generate in this city. The bed tax, remember, is what fuels GCAC's funding structure. So we need people coming in here, spending a night, spending that money, so that we can fund things like Ballet Met, CatCo, the symphony, and the festivals.
Well, and of course, renovating the Lincoln Theater on Long Street is part of a civic effort as well, a municipal effort, because it does enrich that part of town.
Right.
Hopefully then other buildings spring up, that other businesses move to that area to capture people coming there.
Right.
And so this is, it's once again proof that the arts really are a very important part of a community. And even though it might be the easy part to cut, because you don't want to cut police and fire, right. for example, it sometimes can be a very dangerous equation.
Right. And remember, these festivals are not, particularly the Arts Festival, is not funded by the city. These are all most of them are privately funded. They go
well,
out and
the
get sponsors.
They have to pay to pitch their tent.
And they have to pay to pitch their tent, but that doesn't cover everything. Most of these, particularly Arts Festival, are privately funded. And if they don't have the funds, the city definitely can't chip in at this point. My advice is go. Go to any of the arts festivals that are out there. Go to the outdoor theater. Go. Particularly to these free events, and just by sheer numbers, it'll become popular. Vendors will actually get paid, that type of thing, and it'll prove to people that they are popular and keep them going.
Well, and of course, that's one reason why Red, White, and Boom, I think, hasn't been cut. It does have private sponsorship.
Absolutely.
But it brings a huge number of people downtown each
and
every
absolutely,
year.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Upwards of 500,000 people. Just to witness, that event. And
sure.
Kids and families look forward to it, whether you go down or you watch it on TV. It's a huge event in the
sure.
city of Columbus.
Do larger crowds come downtown with all these festivals in the summer and the spring rather than in the winter? In the winter, does it draw as many crowds downtown? I'm trying to think. I was just thinking here. It just seems all summer long there's some kind of festival.
There is some kind of festival. That brings up a good point. And we do have like winter fair, I believe, over at the fairgrounds. Because we have such a harsh winter, I think we're all ready to come out and, go to things like ConFest and the Arts Festival. But I'm wondering if we could move things around a little bit, and so people will come out, let's say, in a March or in an October rather than everything happening in June. Because from, May and June, it seems like there are three things on every weekend,
yeah.
And it, certainly it is dependent on weather, totally get that. But, boy, it would be nice if we could move them out just a little bit.
292-8513. We've only got about 5 minutes left this morning. Jennifer is on the line now to tell us what kind of magic ConFest holds for her. Hi.
Hi. Yes, I was privileged to move to Santa Monica, California, and found out that Venice Beach was only 5 miles away. My sister had suggested that we go there because we were very artsy, and my son's in skateboarding. And just the music and the art and the athlete all seemed to kind of go together. I was rather surprised that Venice Beach, just the flavor of what it was, and I'm just listening to the radio and very excited to think that I can go to ConFest and just capture a little bit of the feeling that I had when I was at Venice Beach.
So you haven't been to ConFest yet?
I've seen it. I've passed by it. I've heard about it. But there's just something in the artist and musician within me, and learning about different eras of time and seeing the culture at Venice Beach that's making me feel like I've got to go this year.
Oh, yeah, you do. Definitely.
Yeah.
So
thank you for the broadcast. And I'm just so excited. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I've known about it for years.
Okay, you know? One bit of advice, though, is get at least try and park somewhere early. Or if have friends that live in the Short North or in Victorian Village.
I think
Village.
I'm just going to have to come find a friend in Columbus and stay.
Yeah,
you know, and just
perfect.
Make it a... Thank you for the information.
Sure. Thank you. And, of course, I've noticed other events in Goodale Park now that there is a huge part of one quarter or the other set aside for bike parking.
Yeah, and that's –
because they are encouraging people.
That really is the best way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I take the number 2 bus. You can, you know, go up High Street, and I'm not going to say the grocery stores that you perhaps might want to park at. But, you know,
I did
take
that
the bus
when I was
down.
An OSU student. I came up from Worthington
on the
bus as a young student. And then later I lived – off of 40 and was able to ride in to college with my son on his little motorcycle. We'd hop on the bus, and I went down by the art school there for school.
Well, you sound like somebody that definitely has got to come to ConFest.
Yeah, well, I also, as a home educator, I want my son to see and experience the culture there and make his own decisions about lifestyle and choices and where it leads people and how music and art fits in.
Perfect.
And it really is an exciting blend of people coming from all different parts of the city and people with seemingly all different sensibilities coming together. And I know when my kids go there, and I really think that it's events like that that make them much more tolerant and understanding human beings because they've been exposed to all different kinds of people.
Well, it also awakens their curiosity
about
culture and about different time frames, too.
For me, it sort of captures a tiny sense of London madness
oh,
in the summertime.
Yes,
it's that sort of mix of people and mix of tastes, a mix of culture. It's just very exciting.
Thank you very much for your call, and have a great ConFest weekend, Jennifer.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. We're going to go quickly to Harold. We've just got a minute or two. You want to weigh in on the Shamrock Club Festival?
Yes. Yes, I do. The Shamrock Club has a music and arts festival in the summertime, and the Shamrock Club Festival this year is like July 11th weekend. But that's always an interesting thing. They do Irish dance down there and get the audience involved in the Irish dance. So it's a lot of fun. And the ConFest area has a rich, rich history. I don't know if anyone's ever mentioned the fact that years ago there used to be wrestling up there with Half Acre.
Right, yes.
And they used to have fishing derbies for kids at Goodale Park. I mean, there's been all kinds of community things that used to go on up there. And White Cross Hospital was right across the street.
Right on the corner across from the park, yeah.
So there were all kinds of people that always occupied and frequent that park because it was such an urban area and there was so much activity there.
Well, thank you very much for your call today and for that information about that festival, the Shamrock Club Festival, going on in July here in Columbus. I'm Marilyn Smith. This is Open Line Weekend. We've been talking with Cindy Gaylord, who is the producer of Art Scene on WOSU-TV and a professor of theater at Ohio State and also theater critic and contributor to WOSU Radio, Joy Riley, a longtime contributor and friend. Thank you both very much for joining us this morning. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org. WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Marilyn Smith. It's 12 o'clock.